listening to the New Mamas Podcast. Hello, everyone. Welcome back to another exciting episode of the New Mamas Podcast. This one is a hot topic because it is also, I consider it a taboo topic because I think not a lot of people talk about divorce and co-parenting after divorce. We're starting to see a bit more videos online, like on Instagram and TikTok, of moms coming out and talking about their divorce situations. But, you know, I feel like there should be more conversation about it because there's just, it's a very common thing. And, you know, relationships are complex. Sometimes there's many different reasons why we separate, why we divorce. So that's why this topic is really important today. I have Mickey Gardner on with me today.
Hi.
Hello. She's a certified life coach and she does a lot of other things that I will let her speak to because I'm not going to roll out her resume on here. But Mickey, welcome.
Thank you. I'm so super excited, Lena, to be here. And thank you for letting me talk with you and your community, because this is a topic we got to talk about.
Yeah.
It just is. It is. You know, over, they're saying almost 60% of marriages end in divorce at this point. And post-pandemic, it's skyrocketed. And we still act as if it's shocking, right? Mm. Or that it's not going to happen, or that we can't talk about it. And that's just, it couldn't be further from the truth. And so I'm super excited to be able to talk about it here with you today.
Yeah, it's a normal process. It's mm-hmm. And it can be also a very healthy process. Another mm-hmm. podcast that you were on that I listened to, one of the takeaways was when a lot of times when people know it's time to separate or divorce is when they realize that they're not their best selves mm-hmm. in that relationship. This partner brings out the worst in them. And sorry, that was in 2021. I think you were on the podcast. So hopefully that's still true.
It's good. Yeah.
But, you know, there's just so many different reasons, and regardless, it can be a healthy process. So let's talk about co-parenting.
Yeah. So it's kind of two topics, right? I divide it all. There's divorce, there's co-parenting, then there's the blended family thing, whole nother topic. Like there's a lot of complexity here. And so I really just want to, I think it's great that we sort of break it down to the different parts of it. But for me, I'm a conscious co-parenting coach is what I call myself. I'm a certified life coach and conscious parenting coach. But through my own life and my own journey and everything else, you know, I did get divorced and it was never intended. I came from a family, no one was divorced. It wasn't something you do. It was for other people. You know, it just wasn't part of it. And I had checked every single box to guarantee a really happy life. And in what felt like an instant, the life I thought I had was shattered. And in that process, I summarize it and make it sound like it was like neatly put back together. But it was over a period of time for me, myself and my then husband, you know, we tried the things to stay together. And, you know, I tried all the people pleasing things that I could think of to make it work out and, you know, to keep the marriage going. But for us, divorce really was the healthiest option. And I had no idea what that was going to look like. Again, I had zero examples in my own life. I had no friends that were divorced. And I really felt so much shame around it and so alone. But at the same time, I remember when I told my ex-husband that we were going to call, I said, you know, let's call it while we still have some semblance of warm fuzzies for one another. I said, because we're always going to be a family. So let's figure out how to do this in a way that we're still a family. And it was ugly and there were ups and downs and all of those things, you know, but for me, the one thing I really took away is parenting can be really alienating, you know, especially parenting with little ones. You feel like you're alone on this island with these young, crazy things that are just, you know, taking over your life. And then when you get divorced, that is another level of alienation. And then you're co-parenting kind of alone again on this island. It can be really, really lonely. And so I'm really grateful that now I'm a coach and a mentor for moms who are going through the journey, so that they have somebody to talk to, so that they have somebody to teach them the tools and the skills to be able to navigate it with calm and with confidence. And so that's a little bit of my resume in a strange little package. I just put it in there.
No, it's the perfect package. It's it's perfect. And I like calm and confident way, because I know just from having friends that have gotten divorced, that it can be a confidence killer. Regardless of the side, if there is a side of the divorce that you're on, sometimes it's not a mutual thing. It can be just shattering. So I love your work. It's so exciting. So a lot of my listeners have very young children, let's say under 5 years old. How do we talk to our little ones about divorce?
I had to take a moment and sort of take a breath. My son was three when we separated. And, looking back, I know that hindsight being 2020, I wish I'd made so many different decisions. But the one thing that I just want to say to you, if you're in this situation, have as much grace and compassion for yourself, because it is so difficult. You know, that's one of the things that I think is the hardest, is when you get divorced, it's not for pleasant reasons. No one's like wakes up in the morning, is like, yeah, let's do this today. It's because, you know, like you said, it's shattering. And everything in your life and your self-esteem, all of it is sort of put into question, and you're struggling, and you're expected to parent these children like flawlessly during it, when you are in an emotionally raw state. That is a tall order. So first and foremost, please give yourself compassion and grace to move through this. And it really does take a village. We are not meant to parent alone. We are not meant to co-parent alone. Like, as much as you can to bring people around you, because we need help and support. As it is, you know, your question about how do you talk to your children? I think it's always, we have to remind ourselves of being age and stage appropriate, right? What can they understand? And most importantly, it's helping them understand what are the changes that are going to be happening, and then preparing them for that. One of the things that children of divorce get really, really good at is being travelers. They travel all the time. And to me, that is one of the most heartbreaking parts of divorce, is that the sense of groundedness, of certainty, of consistency is ultimately really damaged for kids when they have to move back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. And, you know, there's all kinds of different schedules, you know, the week on, the week off, the whatever the things are, right? There's so many that people say are great. None of them are great. And so it's really starting to look at it and understanding, what do my kids, how do they thrive? What do they need? What support do they need? And starting to look at it from a really proactive, solution-oriented mindset of, you know, if you have littles that are three and four, they're not going to understand why mom's not coming with them to this new place. So as much as we can be cooperative with our exes, and to me, that is really the goal, is to always be as collaborative and cooperative as possible for the children. You know, keeping things consistent for them, making rooms as similar as possible, not requiring them. And I understand this is financially very difficult, but not requiring them to pack all the time and have to, you know, if you can have two separate of everything, amazing. If you can't, try to make it as easy as possible, but really just thinking ahead to what are going to be the hardest points. And I think for kids, especially toddlers and young adolescent, or, you know, young children, change is hard. They don't like change. Humans don't like change. And so your children are not going to like this process. So I think part of it is getting really clear for you that we're just trying to help them get through it in the best possible way, and helping them navigate those changes, those transition days, and being open that is age appropriate, right? And so, you know, I'll just say personally for me, You know, I took this stance. I told my son, your mom and dad will always love you. We both love you always and forever. We are just better parents in two separate houses. And so, unfortunately, you're going to share time between the two houses. And I had to learn the hard way, but to be able to let them express when they do, if they are able and they have language, to be upset about it and to say, it's awful, I know, without having to change it, right? Because oftentimes we try to like gloss it over and change it. Oh, well, it's going to be a great time. You're going to have so much fun, you know, all of that. Yes, they need cheerleading at times, but they also just need to know this isn't easy. And we're here to help you as much as we can. So for me, I guess, I don't know that that was necessarily advice, but it's challenging. And I think you just have to try to be as open as possible, but really focusing on for them, what is their experience and how can you minimize the impact of it for them so that it can be as consistent as possible.
And I know a lot of moms feel so much shame around divorce, partially why it's in this taboo topic and people don't talk about it. How can, this is a big, I mean, all my questions are loaded questions, but how can moms start to let go of that shame? Because I imagine too, that affects the conversations that they're having with their children.
So I think it's twofold. One, you know, there's that old adage that time heals all wounds. Yes and no, right? We heal our wounds. And so first and foremost, doing what you need to do for yourself, to care for yourself, because you have to be the strongest version of you for your kids. So I would say getting help processing that, whether that is a coach, whether that is a therapist, whether that is a support group, whether that is the greatest group of girlfriends that you have, whatever, but really people who understand what you've been through and are going through to help support you, because shame only can exist in the dark shadows of ourselves, right? In the little dark corners. As soon as you put light on shame, it dissipates. And so we have to bring light to it. Light, love, openness, healing. So I think the more we can talk, not bashing and gossiping and all of that, but the more that we can talk openly with people who understand what we've been through, that heals shame.
Shame
is always in the silent, quiet places, right? So we have to bring it out and be willing to talk about it again. And I sort of preface this all the time, with people who have earned the right to hear it. Not everybody gets to hear your story, and not everybody should. But the people that you trust with your tender part are those people that have earned the right to be there. Again, whether that's a professional helping you through it, or a friend or a family member who consistently shows up for you with your best interest, because everybody has an opinion about your life, your divorce, and how you should be handling it. Right. And, oh, you should just move on. Oh, it's been a year. You should move on. Oh, you should be over that by now. No, no, you're over it when you've healed and when you're over it. Until then, I think really it's important to protect your heart and to protect your experience, because again, everyone has an opinion. I mean, I can't, it's shocking to me still what people are willing to say. It's like, why is this any of your business? Yeah. But when you're in those really tender parts, it's hard to shield and push those away. So in order to protect your kids, you know how you would like mama bear your kids, you wouldn't let anyone near them. You almost have to do the same thing for your own heart, is start to really protect and take care of you so that you can heal through that.
Wow. Yeah, I love that. Not everyone has earned the right to hear your story. You're so right. And sometimes, you know, I mean, I know this just as my experience as a woman moving through the world, 34 years old, some people come out of the woodwork when bad things happen because they want to know, they just want
all of the juicy details.
They want all the tea, and they're not necessarily the best people because they are not not the best people, but they're not the best of friends that consistently, like you said, show up for you. So yeah. That is, and it can be draining also to have people in your life that only show up when bad things are going on. Mm-hmm. So that's what you said, protect your heart.
Yeah. And you know, Lena, it feels good to be able to say like, oh, this is what happened. And somebody be like, yeah, you know, you're totally all of that stuff. But I always ask, like, how do you feel afterwards? Mm-hmm. Right? Because if you feel drained and like, kind of like, ugh, maybe I shouldn't have said that. Okay. Don't beat yourself up about it, but let's learn and move forward with it. Right? Because we can only look one direction or the other. So let's stay looking in the direction we want to go. Right? It's like, we don't want to stay focused on the past. We want to stay focused on sort of where we're moving. But I think there are those people that sort of really love, you know, love to show up when you're in crisis. And yes, there are great people who do that. But just notice how you're feeling about it. Because again, it's a tall order to heal yourself after divorce. But it's another thing to be actively parenting your children at the same time. And so it's hard and it's possible. And so we really have to just, when you are ready, and you'll know when you are ready, you start moving in that direction.
How can parents going through a divorce start a healthy co-parenting process? Do you recommend any guides or step to take? You know, when we get married, it's not like they give us this like cute little rule book where it's like,
I know,
with a little tab that says divorce. Divorce plus children, like there's no rule book. So how could you give any advice to starting a healthy co-parenting process?
Well, I love that that was your example, because that's my advice. So here's the thing. You, in divorce, right? And honestly, in a lot of marriages, I think we can all agree that we get into very adversarial positions. We sit across the table looking at one another, like ready to really hash this out, right? But that in and of itself, that positioning, if you think about two people staring across a table at each other, is adversarial, right? Mm-hmm. You're on two sides of the table. So what I want for co-parents is to come around the side of the table and imagine yourself figuratively, or, you know, in your mind's eye, sitting next to the other co-parent, looking out onto the field that you guys are playing. Right? If you're a team, because you are, whether you like it or not, I mean, that's the sad thing, is you're having to co-parent and be on the same, like co-captain a team with the last person on earth that you ever want to be on the team with, right? Yeah. They just broke your heart. Of course, you don't want to be co-captain with them. You're like, no, get on your side of the field. But you guys are on the same side. So we've got to get on the same side and look out at the field together. And I use this sort of team analogy because no good football team would go out without practice, without a playbook, without rules of engagement, without timeouts, without strategy, right? Of all of these things. And so we really have to start from that place. And even if your co-parent isn't necessarily on board with you, you can still take this mindset, this team mindset. And part of it might even look like, okay, let me just put some rules of engagement for myself, right? When do I notice that I get really triggered? When do I fly off the handle? When do I really lose my you know what, right? All of those things. And to start to like reverse engineer and build back, what do I need to do to be able to not get myself into a position where I'm making choices I'm not happy with, right? Or, you know, again, really focus, keeping it focused on the kids and not the other co-parent. Cause that's one of the biggest things that I see is, you know, they're like, well, if I don't say anything or if I give in, they're going to win. The other co-parent's going to win. This isn't, as I'm using this game analogy, this isn't a game. And your kids are the ones that are losing every time when you make it a competition. It's not a competition. Right? We're a team and we are going in the same direction with the same purpose. And so I would say starting out, if you're just starting on this journey, maybe make a list of what are all the things that we have that we agree on? What are our commonality? What do we share? Because a lot of times you're like, I don't nothing about this person. We don't agree on anything. You both love your kids, I bet. I bet you both want your kids to be okay in this process. Even if that's the only thing, it's still something. And so we want to start to build more and more shared common agreements. And then again, sort of start to build your rules of engagement book for yourself, right? Like the other co-parent calls you consistently at 10 o'clock at night and it drives you crazy. Don't pick up your phone.
Boundaries.
Like there's many boundaries, right? Like there's many things we can do. And so it's starting to just realize that you have more ability to engage the way you want to when you're doing it from a very conscious, aware place. But we have to really sort of get our mindset around that. And that's why I really like the team idea, is that like, let's stay on the same side of the field looking out and solve the problems from that perspective versus this adversarial position.
Never thought about it that way. I just love how you describe that, sitting across the table versus sitting next to each other. That's probably why in a lot of like even couples therapists, like office, I mean, I've been there even actually before we were married. I think we were engaged and we saw
good for you guys.
A counselor. Yeah. I mean, it's hard to find a good counselor, but it was still a good process, even if it wasn't the right fit. But I remember sitting next to each other and it was almost like awkward, actually.
Oh, it is.
But it's I get it now. So talking about like being on the same team, if a divorce involves a lot of conflict, how can parents navigate that in a healthy way, especially if one partner is more reactive?
So this is, this is a whole topic unto itself. But, you know, one of the things that I see, not just co-parenting, not just divorce, but I think what we're witnessing in this world right now is that people are highly reactive, right? We are just like living in pinball machines where we're reacting to anything that comes at us. And that level of reactivity, right? We feel triggered, we feel out of control, we have no certainty. We're not making conscious choices moving forward, we're just reacting. And as long as we stay in that reaction mode, we're never going to thrive, right? It's just like a survival mode. And so part of the conflict, right, that a lot of people get into is they're just reacting. They're either reacting to patterns that they've been in, habits that they've been in, you know, through the marriage and everything else. And I think it was Einstein that said, you know, we can't do the same thing over and over and expect a different result. It's a definition of insanity, right? We can't continue to act in the same way and expect there to be a different result. And so it's really about learning how to pause and pull back and say, as soon as we realize that we're reactive or that we've gotten triggered or that we're highly emotional or whatever it is, to stop and to let your nervous system regulate, whether that's deep breathing, whether that's breath work, whether, you know, havening, there's many techniques to be able to, but just simply taking 3 deep breaths in and out to bring yourself down so that you can then, to me, the opposite of reactivity is responsibility, but I define responsibility as the ability to respond. So it really is pausing so that you can decide, how do I want to respond to this? And that is a powerful place to be in. Even if the other person is reactive, when you're choosing your response, you are the strongest force. You're the strongest energy and you're moving in the direction you want to go. And so otherwise you're just like two pinballs bumping into each other. So I think when it comes to conflict, learning how to recognize that you've been triggered or activated or in a conflict, because that's half the battle, is just knowing. Half the time you don't even know it. And then 5 minutes later, you're like, how on earth did I just get here? Right? Like, how did we just have that fight? It's like you were totally out of your body. And that's okay. That's how it happens. But as soon as you're aware of it, even if that awareness comes after the fact, that's a powerful moment, because now you can start to understand what just happened. Why did that happen? Right? What was going on for me that I, you know, that's where I went? Because once we start to understand it, we can change it.
And that's where that practice comes in when you mentioned the team analogy of, I imagine it takes practice to understand like your triggers and when your emotions get very flooded. Like I know exactly with like certain people in my life, I know exactly when I get flooded and I just feel that like 0 to 100, but it's like every time you just get a little better, if you can go back and almost have, I don't know what, well, you're a hockey mom. What is it when after a game you have like a huddle and you like, I mean, in my, like in corporate world, we call it a postmortem, but that sounds,
that sounds really
like morbid.
Yeah, you like kind of recap it, right? But that's exactly it. It's being, that's what awareness looks like, being willing to stop and look back, right? With openness and with curiosity and compassion without judgment to say, what just happened there?
Yeah.
Right? How did I get myself, or what really got me going there? Because as soon as you become more aware of it, right, it shortens the time frame, right? Next time, maybe you'll be aware 10 seconds in versus, you know, 2 minutes. We're never going to be not reactive. Like that's just, we're humans, right? We're going to get triggered and that's totally fine. But it's just to start to understand and take more and more control over the situation that you do have, because we don't have a control over a lot. We don't have control over other people, circumstances, you know, any of those things, but we have control over the way that we experience things. And that's a powerful place to start from.
I love that. Yes. It's also very powerful to you can control how you react and how you, exactly. Like you said, I know a lot of single mothers struggle with those weekends or days where the kids are at their ex-partner's house. So hard, so much empathy. Any advice for making those weekends or those days or those weeks a little easier?
Oh, I'm just thinking about one of my sweet little clients. She's so adorable. And, you know, she really struggles. And this, she's not the only one. This is this is totally common, you know, but for her, I have Voxer with my clients so that in between sessions, they can send me messages and tell me like what's going on. And then, So, I mean, that's as their coach and mentor, like I'm there to help them process it. So like all weekend we were like in it, but she sent me a note and she's like, I'm standing outside the mobile station. I think I want to get a cigarette. Like, I don't know what to do. Cause she used to smoke.
Yeah.
She's like, but she was feeling really lonely and she was feeling really down. And that is the go-to coping strategy she used to have. And I sent her a note, but I'm like, I am so proud of you for like sending the message outside the gas station, you know, because you didn't go in. You were aware that that wasn't going to help you. And I think that's a weird start into the answer to answer your question. I'm not suggesting anyone start smoking. But understanding that you are a mom and biologically, you are wired to care for your children. So when they are not with you, it doesn't feel right. It's not supposed to feel right, right? Like people ask me all the time, well, when am I going to be okay with them being gone? I don't know. I'm not. My son's 13, right? It's been 10 years. I still don't like when he goes, right? Because I'm his mom. Now there's other days that I'm like, can you please go to your father's? Because I cannot for one more second with you, right? But what I'm saying is that we can't expect ourselves to just be okay.
Yeah.
Right. It's like, it's going against what you're wired to do. So a lot of compassion for that part of it. The next step to this is starting to make really good choices when your children are gone. Because one thing that I've noticed with a lot, definitely in my own life, you know, I spent a lot of time drinking. You know, I would go to the bar, I'd go out with friends, I'd do whatever. Listen, no, whatever you want to do, right? But like my client who was like, I don't want to go and do that. I won't feel good after, right? It's not what I want to do, but she's struggling. And so that's sort of why that image came to my mind. But I think we have to sort of be aware and understand, okay, of course I'm going to want to go out and party. Of course, I'm going to want to go out and do X, Y, Z, or maybe I'm going to want to just be in my bed and not get out because I can't even get out from under the covers. So I would say just start to do one or two things a day that fill you up, right? And so I have all my clients make a list of 20 things that their soul loves. And this sounds ridiculous, but it's
no, it
actually
doesn't.
Really helpful.
It does not sound ridiculous. Sounds awesome.
So we make a list of 20 things, right? Like on mine, I really do love a bath. I love walking outside. I love reading a book in this one chair with this one blanket, right? It like anything that makes you feel kind of cozy and warm, talking to a friend, you know, whatever it is, but making a list of 20 things. And then on those days, fully expecting to not feel great, do one or two things that feel good, right? And if you can't get out from under the covers, all I say is just get out and do one thing. And then you can go back under the covers, right? But we got to start to move towards taking care of you, filling you back up. Because what I see so often is, you know, you're just like, I just want to get out. I just, you know, whether it's you want to go party or you want to go do this, or you just want to busy yourself. They do that. And then their kids come back and they're drained. They're exhausted. They're not ready. And then they end up with a short fuse with their children. And then there's a whole level of guilt and shame around that, right? So it's really about starting to utilize those days for you to love and care for yourself so that you are filled up and feeling really full when your kids come back. Because otherwise we just deplete ourselves trying to like run away from it. And so that would be sort of my advice for just starting to think about how are ways that I can take care of me so that I can be ready for them.
Love that. I love the 20 things.
Oh, it's so good. It's so good.
And I know that on my hard days, I try to just tell myself like, what will make me feel 5% better? And yeah. I feel like giving the very small, like no pressure, like I'm going to feel 100%, because it's when you're at zero, it's really hard to, you don't even want to try because you're like, I'm not going to be 100%. So why even bother? So even just giving that, like, what will make me feel 5% better? And then it starts to snowball into some sort of positive outcome. Yeah,
exactly.
So much empathy. I love how you put it, like, as just as mothers, like it feels unnatural.
Because it is. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But you know, we see like Instagram or the movies or whatever, you know, like living their best life when their kids are gone, this idea. Yeah. And then that puts a lot of pressure. Like you're supposed to just instantly do. No, like,
no, it's crazy.
It's up and down. And again, like you said, it's not all the way to one end. It's just, how can I do one thing today? Mm-hmm. How can I do one thing stepping towards the direction that I want to go and feel better in?
So maybe along the same kind of topic, but different, same, but different, is how can two parents going through divorce begin to navigate holidays and birthdays? It's a big one. I know. It's a big topic. Yeah.
Okay. So this is not going to be, this is my tough love. I'm pretty sweet and loving. And then sometimes I'm not. And this is where.
Give us the tough love.
Okay. So it's not about you. It's about your children. And so what so often happens is we put our kids in the middle and they become a pawn in this chess game of like trying to get back at the other parent, right? I'm going to withhold this. I'm going to do these things separately. I really believe in keeping a centered approach, a child-centered approach, meaning I think that the children are the sun that we all revolve around. Our only job is to not crash our orbit into the other parent's orbit. But that helps me. I like analogies, but you know, that helps me to see they are the middle and my job is to go around them. So, and it is really easy to want to withhold or to want to not have to engage, especially on holidays, with the other parent. And listen, if there is conflict, if there is abuse, if there is anything that is really detrimental to the children, we're not talking about that. I'm talking about sort of like those people who are, you know, maybe somewhat cooperative, but just really struggling in the process. I want you to think about what would the children want most? What would be the best for them? And then how could I give that to them, right? So if you want to have sort of this, I really wanted our family to still have like Christmas morning together. That was my thing. I really, really wanted it. I don't know that my ex-husband's now wife really loved this idea. it was a little awkward for a while, but I asked every year, would you guys come over? Would you spend, you know, Christmas morning? When I had him for Christmas morning, I would invite them. They didn't come, and I had to learn to be okay with that, but I kept asking. And why, maybe I'm a glutton for punishment, but also I kept my eye on what it was I wanted. I wanted a collaborative, cooperative, open, loving home for all of our family. And so we did get there where they did come over, right? And we had Christmas morning with their son, who was then, I think, one or two. And I thought, oh my gosh, we got there. Like, oh, you know, everything, the heavens have parted, everything's fine. The next year they had Christmas morning. Was my invitation lost in the mail? Yes, it was. And I was devastated, devastated. But I also had to go back and then say I was really hurt, right? And for them, they didn't realize it, you know, all those things. I bring this up because it's an example of we have to own our own feelings about it, separate from the children. So I think that's where having a therapist, having a coach, having someone in your corner to help you process how you're feeling about, because the holidays bring up all of the stuff. Birthdays bring up all of the emotions. And so we have to be processing those on our own so that we can then leave the children their own experience, right? And men are really amazing at compartmentalizing. They can just like shut their brain off and go over here and like think only about this one thing, right? It's like a superpower. Yeah. We do not have this skill, right? Like our brain, actually like the parts of our brain are bigger because we need to multitask. We need to be able to do all the things. But compartmentalization is a really useful skill to learn when you're co-parenting, because we need to be able to sort of hone in on what is my priority, what is most important with the holidays or birthdays, and then how can I work to find solutions for that, right? How can I make it about the children and not as much about me? And I know I'm making this very, like, you don't get to have any fun in your life, which is not true. But we have to really, especially with the littles, I think it's important that we keep it very centered on what is best for them. And what is best for them is also having a healthy, happy mom. And so what is going to make you healthy and happy in this situation? That might be not engaging on the holidays. That might be having separate time because that's what you need. And that's okay. That's this year. You know, as you heal, as you evolve, next year might be different, right? But really meeting yourself where you are and being honest about what you're able, what your capacity is, what your values are, what you want, and being able to move through it from there.
Wow. It could be in its own podcast episode, but that's a really great, start. And I love the tough love. Okay. So this is a big one, loaded question. Bringing a new partner into the mix. Let's say a new stepmom or stepdad or, you know, a boyfriend or a girlfriend. Any, like, changing the co-parenting relationship, basically. Like, let's say this new person is now going to play an active role in the relationship. Any advice for making this transition more seamless? Now that is a podcast episode on its own.
Yeah, that really is. So here's what I'm going to say, because I think let's step back a few steps. Because if you're actually like, if there's a new stepmom or something, like that's a relationship that's pretty solidified at that point, versus when do you, you know, how do you introduce kids, all of those things. There's many levels to this and there's no one answer. But to me, I think it's, again, keeping your children center and understanding that it is not their responsibility to navigate your emotional life, right? Their only job is to be them. And so I believe in being very protective of children as it relates to new people in their life. One of the hardest things that I watch so many of my clients go through is the revolving door of partners on the other side, right? Your children have experienced a great loss just as you have, and they don't need more loss. So to me, we can't control what the other person is doing, but as it relates to you, you are allowed to date. You are allowed to do all of those things and have a great time. And I encourage it. And you should do all of those things on your time. If you are not fully committed in a relationship that you know is going to really like go to the next level, I don't understand why your children would be involved. That's a little bit of a tough love. Other people will completely disagree with me, right? Just my opinion. But I think that our children have been through enough. And we can absolutely introduce people in larger settings. You know, like it's not that they have to be totally separate. But as it relates to a romantic situation or allowing somebody to step in as a quote unquote step parent, totally different, right? That is, again, they have earned the right to be there. And that takes time. And so I just would really preface, or I would really caution moms and dads to err on the side of less interaction is more, especially if they're seeing it on the other side. Because the revolving door of people in and out, you know, is that what we want? And I know for me, Lena, the real deciding factor, and this is something that, you know, I work with my clients on setting their vision and their values first, because we need a compass to sort of guide our actions. The night that I made the decision, I was crying on the side of the highway with my car pulled over, just broken. We had gone to another fight, like where it went from 0 to 100 in 2 seconds. And I thought, how on earth are we here? And I knew there was a voice, whatever you want to call it, God, universe, purple unicorn, I don't know. There was a clear voice that said, is this the example that you want for your son of a mom and a woman and a wife? And I said out loud, no, I am not being the example. And to me, that's when I knew I am his example of what it looks like to be a woman, to be a friend, to be a mom, to be an ex-wife, to be a wife, all those things. And it's my job to show up as best I can every day in being that example. And so I would say that's something that only you can answer for you. But when you look at your children, is that the example you want to be setting? And if it is, great, right? But being really honest with yourself, first and foremost, because you can only control your part and showing up as best you can. I don't know that I answered your question.
You did. I think you answered a few different questions, because actually the other one I was going to ask was, what is the appropriate amount of time between divorce and finding a new partner, getting into dating? And then I was going to ask, do your kids need to know? Does your ex-partner, how do you begin to talk to them about that? But I think you answered all of that. Unless there's something in there that you want to speak to.
No. Yeah. I mean, you asked a couple more there. So I was like, but again, it's really your business.
Yeah.
Right. And you get to decide, and you get to decide what information to share with your ex, with your children. I would just always really preface it as, if we're coming from a place of neediness, needing a relationship or needing to talk about it, right? That's when it feels sticky. That's kind of a moment that maybe I need to do a little cleanup here, like internal cleanup. But when you're coming from a very clean place and you are feeling healed and like ready to move on and go into a new, right? I'm all for it. And so I just think we have to be really honest with ourselves. And that's where having a tribe and a group of people or a mentor or a coach or a therapist to really be walking it with you is so helpful, because otherwise we just get lost in kind of the weeds of all of the emotion.
Yeah. And like we were talking about being reactive, like you just become into this cycle of like reacting to each little thing in your life of like feeling lonely. Okay, I'm going to go swipe on this and bring a partner in. And yeah, it's instead of coming from a place of not, I guess, not proactive.
Yeah,
like you said,
proactive.
a healed place.
Yeah.
Well, Miki, we are at time. Oh, I would love to thank you so much. This episode, I feel like, is a very helpful book to just getting started with co-parenting after divorce. And tell us actually a little bit more about the life coaching that you offer. It sounds really attractive. Voxer, like, will you just give us a little bit more info about that?
Yeah, thank you. I love working one-to-one with clients. And so we really, whether it's a 3 or 6 month sort of process, but really working one-to-one where I help you learn how to shift out of the drama and the conflict so that you can become calm and confident and really clear on what matters. Because, you know, everything feels chaotic and it's really learning how to bring calm to that. And so I do work one-to-one with clients, which is great. And then I do have Voxer, you know, and many other things in between. But that's the, you know, I also have a podcast, which is Co-Parenting with Confidence, where I talk about all things co-parenting and all of these topics. So, you know, if someone is going through it, I would highly recommend that as a free resource. I just wrote a book, which is coming out December 5th, which I am so excited about. So that's going to be launching soon. Again, to help with all things co-parenting. And so there's a lot of free resources. And I think that's the great thing. I didn't have any of that when I was going through it. Like no one was talking about this. There was very little out there. And so there's so much out there now and, free resources, you know, ways that you can invest. And so, I would highly encourage you to start to really reach out and to learn more, because that's what it's really all about. And I do have a free co-parenting masterclass too. That's only 20 minutes, super simple, teaches you the 3-step framework to start like today, getting out of reaction. So,
oh, I love that.
Yeah. That's a super simple, easy way to get going. So,
yeah. Wow. That's, what's your book going to be called?
It's called The People Pleaser's Guide to Co-Parenting Well.
Oh my God. I laugh because I'm like, oh my God, I'm such a people pleaser. Like, I feel like and this is a whole nother topic, but I feel like a lot of women, unfortunately, are people pleasers just because the way we were raised. And if you're a woman, if you're also a woman from like a ethnic background, like Chinese, like I come from a Chinese Portuguese background, like was taught that being submissive was like, the purpose of, you know, womanhood. Yeah. That's a great, great title. Love it.
Yeah. Thank you. Well, awesome. I am a recovering people pleaser. So I wrote it for myself as much as anyone else, but you know, it is something that so many of us really don't even see the shadow side of people pleasing, you know, because people pleasers are awesome, right? We really are. We get a lot done. Everybody loves us.
Yes.
We get a lot of praise.
We are very liked.
Very liked, you know, but there's another side. And so I was really excited to sort of share that. So,
yeah,
but thank you, Lena, for having me today and for all you do. I love your podcast and listening to it and how honest and real and just inspiring you are. So thank you for what you're doing in the world.
Thank you so much. So everybody, I will link all of Miki's Instagram, Facebook, her podcast, website, everything in the show notes. So definitely check it out. Thanks for listening and stay tuned next week for the next episode. Bye. Thanks for joining us this week on the New Mamas Podcast. This podcast was created to help first-time moms everywhere navigate this new stage of life and talk about the honest and the raw moments in motherhood. I'm your host, Lena Forrestal. I'm a working mom by day and a blogger, photographer, and podcaster by mid-afternoon. And as a first-time mom myself, I'm on this journey with you. I hope you enjoyed this episode as much as I did, and if you did, be sure to subscribe and leave a review on your favorite listening platform. You can donate to the show at buymeacoffee.com/newmamaspodcast. Stay in touch by following us on Instagram at newmamaspodcast and Lena Forrestal. Thanks again, and stay tuned next week for the next episode. Bye!